in the United States, we have lost most of our once Catholic schools. Did you know that? I never thought I'd live to see the day where I'd have an office in an empty convent and now a growing library in the next door empty Catholic school. What's happened to our once Catholic hospitals? All but wiped out. And what's the reason? This is the main reason. Only God judges, but before God, those in the executive branch of our government, senators, federal judges, and those on the Supreme Court, are murderers. They are murderers. And we Americans, most Americans, if they realize it, have done nothing about it. Finally, teachers and authors and those in charge of institutions who allow the abortion mentality to flourish, even on an international level, share in the grave guilt of murder of the unborn. Oh, thank God for our Pope. We need to hear this. And when the Holy See told me to analyze the largest circulating sex education program used in Catholic schools, of course, I did my job. But I found out that there is such widespread error, especially in moral matters, in nominally Catholic institutions, that it's no wonder that an increasing number of Catholic parents find no choice except in home education or homeschooling. As I told the audience in Kentucky yesterday, and share with you, the pro-abortion trade in its multi-billion dollar business, cannot either be stopped or reversed by any ordinary human means. Only God's grace, through prayer, sacrifice, the sacraments, especially the Holy Eucharist. I don't think I've ever said this before to any of you attending these classes. And your conscience be your guide. But I know of no more potent means of obtaining from God the moral miracle of converting abortionists and stopping this mass murder than the daily assistance at Mass and daily reception of Holy Communion. I mean that. As I told the people yesterday, my second lecture was 12 questions and then 12 answers. And the theme was the sanctity of human life. How do we know that human life is holy? How do we know that human life is precious in the eyes of God? A litany of reasons, but my last reason, which I'll share with you, is because God decided to assume human life. Do you hear me? The infinite God decided to assume human life, was conceived of a human mother. Why? Of course, that he might sacrifice that human life on the cross for our salvation. That's reason number one. But reason number two, God assumed human life, became true man, so that he might remain on earth with his human life. That's the Holy Eucharist. What is the Eucharist? The Eucharist is a second person of the Trinity on earth, living in the Holy Eucharist with a human life. Let me tell you, there are many priests, sadly, who don't really know what the Eucharist means. Never thought I'd live to have to say it. It was being taped when I did yesterday. Beautiful new church. Go through the church. A wide altar, but no sanctuary. No tabernacle. And I told the people, knowing that I'd be recorded and then marketed, it pains me terribly to have to say that I'm speaking to you and you are not facing our Lord in the Holy Eucharist. Guess where they put the Holy Eucharist? In the back, outside the church. With a few seats for some pious people who still believe in the real presence. It is this faith that will restore sanity in our world. Please God, I'm talking to the right audience. And now, my clock here says 1:56. As I think I told you, I want to concentrate, having covered so far, on our first course on the Gospel of Life. Now, I can ask you to take your two charts. And for the rest of today's class, then, we will concentrate on course number two. Remember the context. What we are doing is analyzing Catholicism and Protestantism from about a dozen different perspectives. Here, he is comparing the Catholic Church with Protestantism on the level of social ideas and practices. In other words, the idea of society, or if you wish, social morality. First, an introduction. We begin by making the statement that ideas have their consequences. It must be 30 years ago that I read this book, published, as I remember, by the University of Chicago. Title was Ideas Have Consequences. There's no such thing as an idea in the human mind without consequences on the level of human conduct. Here, the principles of Protestantism, in contrast with those of Catholicism. How are these two sets of principles not just in contrast, but in conflict? And there is one thing that Protestantism has done. It was, remember, we said in our last class, to have removed all visible authority on earth from the church founded by Christ. Who alone has authority? Only the state. Now, still on the introduction, among the countries in the world that have been most deeply influenced by what I may call Protestant social morality are the Anglo-Saxon countries. Thus, colonization politically promoted Protestantism. Theologically or ideologically. When in 1948 India declared its independence of Great Britain, Gandhi, the great, might say, George Washington of India, as you know, paid for his freeing his people from Great Britain. He paid for that with his life. You know, Gandhi was assassinated. Well, Gandhi was a great friend of many Christians. He always carried with him, so my Jesuit confreres from India told me, he always carried with him a copy of the New Testament and, hear it, the Imitation of Christ. Pardon me, can I ask? I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I'll ask. How many of you have a copy of the Imitation of Christ somewhere? Oh, I'm so proud of you. Too bad the camera isn't turned this way. God bless you. If you don't have a copy, get one. If you don't have the money, I'll get permission from my Jesuit superiors to give you my copy of the Imitation of Christ and read it. I repeat, Gandhi had a great love for Jesus Christ. But what we saw in India brought there by a Protestant Great Britain, or something like 200 Protestant denominations. And he had put into the Indian constitutions no more evangelizing in India, except by native Indians. He saw the havoc that all of these divisions in Protestantism can cause. Now, the principal areas of Protestant influence, strange. Capitalism and, would you believe it, communism. And then, in race relations. I believe we go, unless I'm mistaken, with this section of class to 225. Is that correct? Then we have a 15-minute break. I have then 20 minutes to finish this chart. First, capitalism. As you know, words, especially in the English language, have a variety of meanings. In fact, often a contrariety of meanings. It all depends on who uses the word. The Holy Father, however, has coined a word, laissez-faire capitalism, a capitalism which canonizes the individual . If there is one principle of Protestantism, it is the individual is his own master. And consequently, individualism or Protestantism has deeply affected what we call a capitalist society, producing what we may call illiberal or laissez-faire capitalism. I put down Max Weber. It would be worth reading a book written by this man, Capitalism and Protestantism. It had been read, I'm not exaggerating, I would say, by millions. Here's how the argument runs. In the Western world, which ones are the most advanced? Which countries have the largest industries? In which nations is the per capita income the highest? Which nations, have the most industries, the largest number in colleges and universities? They are those countries which have been Protestantized. That's Max Weber's thesis. Which are the poor countries? Those in which the living standard is way below, as we say, par. And millions are not just hungry, as in the Western world, but even starving. Who are the poor countries of the Western world? We don't have to guess. Catholic. Having taught 6 graduate courses in Protestantism, having taught, as I've told you, in a half a dozen Protestant seminaries, I know Protestants and I love them, but I sure also know Protestantism and I do not love Protestantism. Am I clear? Catholic teaching, for example, this is in one Protestant social writer after another. The Catholic Church wants to keep its people poor. And the contrast between two visible authorities, church and state. In canonizing the state and vesting the state with supreme authority on earth, do you hear me? This is a good, honest theological definition of Protestantism. Protestantism is that branch of Christianity which has canonized the authority of the state. State authority on earth. One thing should be said before we leave capitalism. Not only is there a notorious contrast between the super wealth of countries that have adopted the Protestant ethic in contrast to the poverty, penury of Catholic nations. But the wealthy nations have become wealthy, hear it and don't forget, at the price of the nations which have become impoverished because these other countries drained the resources of countries and became poor, because this is now 400 years of studied liberal laissez-faire capitalism. And I think I've said on some one occasion, you know, I believe three times that I've given courses to Mother Teresa's sisters in Tijuana. And you know, it's northern Mexico, just south. Who knows? One large American city is just north of Tijuana. San Diego. You fly into San Diego. I'm not exaggerating. It's an earthly paradise. Either in a car to pick you up or on a bus. Less than 1 hour from the airport in San Diego. You are in desperate poverty. Unpaved streets. Hunger all around you. And armed guards protecting the United States from being penetrated by these thieves from Mexico. Hope I'm making sense. Oh, how much we have to learn. Our next section on communism. As we know, communism was started by Karl Marx. however, especially in the Western world, communism has become, in many ways, a reaction against, now, the capitalists have coined the term, rugged capitalism, which means capitalism that drains other people of their resources. And as a consequence, given the widespread individualism in Protestant and Protestantized countries, there has been a reaction in favor of socialization. And as a consequence, there's been a minimizing of doctrine leading to the acceptance of Marxism. Because, let me tell you, you push the Protestant ethic as explained at length, say, by Max Weber, you push that to its logical extreme. And you say to yourself, this cannot go on. Individuals becoming wealthy and other people suffering. I'll never forget. Let's see. I'm not sure I was in the Society of Jesus yet. In college, I read A Life of John D. Rockefeller. I'll never forget that book, quoting Rockefeller at length. And, as you know, he lived and died a staunch Calvinist Protestant, John D. Said, Mr. Rockefeller, there are some people who are divinely chosen to be leaders in society. There are some people who have been divinely chosen to accumulate wealth so that both with their genius and with their wealth, they can then fuel other people and show them how to live. The reaction against that what we're calling rugged individualism has led so many to accept socialism, indeed Marxism. Who would know in what country Karl Marx did most of his research and study and planned communism? In what country? In England. As a reaction of English Protestantism against that, shall I quote it, rugged individualism. Socialization, which as you know, in most cases, is just another name for communism. I thought I would refer to Pope Pius XI's encyclical on communism. I didn't have space to finish the word. Pope Pius XI published what I consider the most masterful document on communism ever printed. The English title is Atheistic Communism. Pope Pius XI. And his definition of communism should be memorized. Says Pius XI, communism is utopian messianism M-E-S-S. I-A-N. I-S-M. When you read Karl Marx, then you put him aside. I began reading Marx, I think I've told you more than once, when I was 14 years old. He was Slav descent myself. I learned all that I could about my confrères suffering and dying for their faith under communism. You read Karl Marx. Close the book. Then you read The Passion of Christ. Who are the people that crucified Christ? Those who were Jews only in name, or lost their faith in the true Messiah. Pray for the Jewish people. The conflict among the Jews, those who still believe and deeply in the one true God of Israel, who are still every Sabbath in every synagogue in the world, there's a prayer, O come, Emmanuel, pray for the coming of the Messiah. And those like Karl Marx, who had lost their faith and were looking forward to, and Marx thought he was the one to do it. To establish a messianic kingdom in which the Messiah would not promise happiness in the life to come. But all the worldly satisfactions that we want here on earth. Hence, utopia. Now, race relations. We begin already in the 15th century when Pope Pius II condemned the enslavement of the people from Africa. My professed Catholics, especially in Southern Europe. Then, Pope Paul III, almost as soon as the New World was discovered, what happened? The Spaniards and Portuguese began to rob the tribes of Africa, to remove fathers from their families. Hundreds of men dumped into boats, many of whom died on the way to the New World. To open slavery. And the Indians, same thing. Oh, let's be sure we know the difference between the Catholic Church as established by Christ and teaching his doctrine and Catholics near God. What a safe statement. Not all of them living up to Christ's teaching. So the popes condemned both the enslavement of Indians and the enslavement of Africans and brought to the New World. one of my fellow Jesuits when I was studying theology. You're both ordained on the same day. He was from Brazil. And we talked 4 years. Oh, how many ideas we exchanged. And he told me, John, I just can't understand all this race prejudice that you've got in the United States. How come? In Brazil, he said, this goes back to the beginnings of South America. We've had intermarriage. We have mutual acceptance of the races. European, Indian, and African. And he tipped off some of his ancestors from all three continents. In other words, the popes got through. Now, in contrast, we've been reading for years now about South Africa. As I told my students over the years, and in teaching also my Protestants, the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa, the most thoroughly Calvinist religion in world Protestantism. In other words, there are certain races that are chosen. And the blacks are not among them. We'll never begin to understand race prejudice unless we understand that there are certain cultures that consider other cultures as lower, and where they make in that culture a religion of their prejudice, as the Dutch Reformed, among others, have done. St. Peter Claver in South America, as you know, spent his life caring for the African slaves. I've given retreats over the years to the Sisters of St. Peter Claver. The American Civil War. This may surprise you. The American Civil War was between two religions, not just the North and South. Between those who believed that those from Africa are as chosen as those from other continents. Thank God our Civil War ended the way it did. Then the idea of a chosen people. You read the Westminster Confession of Faith, almost 400 years old, still the standard confession. In which it is said that certain races has been specially chosen by God. And they have been chosen by God to, well, shall we say it, be masters over those who are to be I won't say enslaved, but be of the service of those who are specially chosen. And just one word on the theology of race prejudice. Behind, as we know, the Protestant understanding of being chosen is that from all eternity, some people have been chosen to be saved. Others, on the other hand, what shall we say, have not been so chosen. And we're going to, and let's be honest, if we're going to cope, I hope I am wrong. But if we're going to cope with what I fear is a rising prejudice of those people who have been discriminated against for centuries, defending themselves, please God, Christianity and not Islam will be on the side of both those who are black and those who are Caucasian. Am I making sense? Oh, how we need to see that just as a mistaken understanding of the different races as reflecting being either specially or not specially chosen by God. That, as a reaction to that prejudice, we now not have to pay for the contrary prejudice. Because, as I'm sure you realize, those who for centuries have been discriminated against, Unless they are brought up and trained in Christian mercy, it was going to happen. Those of our centuries have discriminated against these others are going to pay dearly. I hope I am wrong. The conjunction, and our papers just take it for granted, the conjunction of the African people with Islam is most, most dangerous for the future of not just the white race, but for Christianity. Our faith tells us, no matter how unjust others have been, we are to forgive, to be merciful. I sure hope I'm making sense. As you see, I am avoiding specific names to make sure that I get across what I mainly want to explain here, that because race prejudice had used religion, namely Protestantism, to protect itself and promote its ideas for almost 500 years, let's make sure and those who have been so terribly wronged will now not adopt another religion and not Christianity to reverse the sufferings they have endured for so long. Thank you for listening. My clock says two. Oh, pardon me. I didn't see well. It's 2:33. Give ourselves 10 minutes, okay? We'll resume. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.